Solomon is still talking to us from Ecclesiastes 8, verses 1 through 17. Thank you. Page 619 of the Old Testament. Who is like the wise man, and who knows the interpretation of a thing? Wisdom makes one's face shine, and the hardness of one's countenance is changed. Keep the king's command because of your sacred oath. Do not be terrified. Go from his presence. Do not delay when the matter is unpleasant, for he does whatever he pleases. For the word of the king is powerful, and who can say to him, "What are you doing?" Whoever obeys a command will meet no harm, and the wise mind will know the time and way.
For every matter has its time and way, although the troubles of mortals lie heavily upon them. Indeed, they do not know what is to be, for who can tell them how it will be? No one has power over the wind to restrain the wind, or power over the day of death. There is no discharge from the battle, nor does wickedness deliver those who practice it.
All this I observed, applying my mind to all that is done under the sun, while one person exercises authority over another to the other's hurt. Then I saw the wicked buried. They used to go in and out of the holy place and were praised in the city where they had done such things. This also is vanity, because sentence against an evil deed is not executed speedily. The human heart is fully set to do evil. Though sinners do evil 100 times and prolong their lives, yet I know that it will be well with those who fear God, because they stand in fear before him. But it will not be well with the wicked, neither will they prolong their days like a shadow, because they do not stand in fear before God.
There is a vanity that takes place on earth, that there are righteous people who are treated according to the conduct of the wicked, and there are wicked people who are treated according to the conduct of the righteous. I said that this also is vanity. So I commend enjoyment, for there is nothing better for people under the sun than to eat and to drink and enjoy themselves. For this will go with them in their toil through the days of life that God gives them under the sun. When I applied my mind to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, how one's eyes see sleep neither day nor night, then I saw all the work of God, that no one can find out what is happening under the sun. However much they might toil in seeking, they will not find it out. Even those who are wise claim to know. They cannot find it out. Thank you, Beth.
Thus ends our reading.
So if you've been with me this summer, you know some of these readings from Ecclesiastes get long and laborious, as today's reading. So my job is to try to unpack it for you. So today, what Solomon's wisdom that he brings to us is talking about how we need to honor and respect those people who are in places of authority. And in these verses, he talks about two, the authority of the king and the authority of God. And how do we live giving our allegiance to those two? It's all about respecting people who are in those positions of leadership and authority. Now, here's something that most of you figured out by now. I did not grow up in Southern California. I grew up somewhere else that was Southern. And my mother's dream, I think, was to raise 2 fine young Southern gentlemen. So from early on, it was drilled in my head to respect my elders, to respect those people in positions of authority. And I'm sure that perhaps some of the first words I learned to speak were about respect, because I'm sure she drilled in me early on to say yes, ma'am, and no, sir. And I think that's what Solomon's trying to teach us in a way today. So we're going to look first at what he says about giving our respect to the king. In our text, he says, obey the king's commands. Well, now that's very easy for Solomon to say because he is the king. And of course, he wants all of his subjects, you and I, to obey him. That's how kings can rule, right? If they've got subjects who do everything the king says. Now, this is where Solomon and I are going to disagree, because he goes on to tell you that as the loyal subjects of King Solomon, you must obey and do everything King Solomon says. So enough people probably read this chapter of Ecclesiastes and decided that kings may not be the best kind of ruler to have, and some people have gotten rid of their kings and queens and absolute rulers. So my quest for today is to take this teaching and try to apply it to us and to our situation and where we can respect authority. So instead of reading in the text, obey the king's commands, what if you had read, obey the president's commands? Some of you might bristle at those words right now, and some of you might find that okay to do, because that's the way politics work. We've tended to see sort of flip-flops of our administrations between Democratic and Republican presidents. Depending on your party affiliation and how you vote, at one time in the history of our country, when your party has got its platform out there and its person in office, you probably think it's pretty easy to give some authority and respect to our president. But when the person sitting in the office is of the different party and not of your platform and your views, and you didn't vote for that individual, then you probably aren't so pleased to give your respect to that person in office. But there is something about the office itself that which we need to give our respect and realize that they are in a position of authority, and that we need to kind of honor that person. And I would dare say we need to pray for our president, no matter who is sitting in the Oval Office at whatever given four-year stretch of time. And I want to throw that net a little bit wider and say we probably need to respect all of our elected officials. But having said that, I will be the first to say they're very quickly going to turn around, many of them, and do something of which we should not respect them for their actions, not for their job. And so I'm going to take you down a trail for a moment that Solomon wouldn't have even understood, because it was not the world in which he ruled and the world in which people lived. It's one thing to respect those in positions of leadership, but it's another thing sometimes to stand up to them when their policies or their decisions seem to not be right. And that's where you have to use your own will and judgment to make your voice be heard. And that's why we live in a democracy and not under a monarchy, and there's a huge difference. We do have the freedom to let our differences be heard, and we should engage in peaceful protest when we think decisions made by those in positions of authority are not right, because that's how the larger voice gets heard. And there's nothing disrespectful as long as you're doing your communications peacefully. Whether you're writing letters to your elected officials, you're not cussing them out in a letter or telling them they're the most stupid person on the face of the earth, but you're just pointing out what is important to you so that they hear from their constituents what matters. Or if you take up some protest, as long as you remain peaceful in what message you're proclaiming, then I still think you're respecting authority, and that's what makes it work. It's tough to hear what Solomon says in this first half of the chapter. But if you think about it, we're under authority of all kinds of people. Most of you are citizens of the United States. You are under the authority of this government until you choose otherwise. If you've ever, and I think sometimes we take that for granted because we didn't have to earn it. Most of us were born with this privilege. One of the most humbling things I've ever experienced is go to a ceremony when people who are becoming new United States citizens are sworn in and get the privilege that I was born with. They had to do a heck of a lot more work than I did. Some of you should try to take the citizenship test and see if you could pass it. I don't think many of us in this room could. It's pretty amazing what is required to have citizenship in a nation. And if you don't like the nation in which you live, you can go somewhere else and try to live and gain citizenship there, and it probably won't be any easier than those who come to these shores and try. School starts tomorrow for many of the young people in our midst. That's hard to believe. Whether they like it or not, Diego's going to go to a new grade, a new teacher, and he's going to be given some expectations of how that teacher's going to expect that year to go. And if he wants to do well in school, he's probably going to need to pay attention and obey what the teacher says tomorrow and the days following. Those of you who work, and you don't work for yourself, you're under the obedience of your company. When you were hired, you were given a job description. You signed off on that and you said, yes, this is what I will do. And as part of that, you promised that you would show up at whatever time, let's say 8 o'clock in the morning, and you would leave at 5 p.m. And in that time frame that you've said you will work, your loyalty is to your employer and the work that you're being paid to do. And those of you who've committed to church, you've made some loyalty agreements as well. If this is to mean anything to you, then you said, yes, to the Lord I will give of myself, I will give of my time, I will give of my talents, and I will give of my treasure. So you see, we've all made some commitments, some loyalty oaths, if you will, to obey whatever the king commands, as Solomon says. So now let's go to the second part of what he says. He said to obey God. Now he didn't do a parallel phrase here, but I'm going to pull out his words and make a parallel. He also says to obey God's commands. Well, you might think that's easy. There's only 10 of them, right? Wrong. If you read the Old Testament where you find the 10, if you keep reading, there's over 600. Obey God's commands. I don't imagine too many of us have done well with all 600 plus of the commands that appear in the Old Testament. So we quickly say, oh, forget that book. Let's read the New Testament. Well, the commands there are even harder because there's two. To love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. You might just want to go back and get the 600. They might be easier to do than the two that Jesus left us with. Obey God's commands. Because the problem is, we don't do that very well. That's why we have to come here every Sunday, and in a moment we're going to get a prayer that changes every month, so there's going to be a new version for you that you're learning in August. But somewhere embedded in that prayer is something you say every week. Lord, let thy will, not Joe's or your name, let thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Why do we have to say that every week? Why do we need that reminder? Because we don't do it very well. We don't live under thy will. We live under my will. We try to take over and control and figure out what's going to happen today and tomorrow and next week and next year. It's like God's a little statue for us. We bring God out on Sunday, and then we put God on the shelf, and then we come back next Sunday and remove God and bring God back in. That's what gets us into trouble. Obeying the will of God is a daily exercise. Maybe we should say that prayer every day to start the day to remind us of what we're committing to. Solomon has some wisdom here that I think is worth holding on to. He doesn't say it in these words, but I'll use some more contemporary words to help you understand his ancient stuff. Don't sweat the big stuff, because you'll never win. You'll just be a sweaty person, because you can't control it. That's what he's saying in these ending verses. Bad things happen to good people. Good things happen to bad people. He says, that's just the mysteries of life. You can't figure out what's coming tomorrow. None of us can. You may think you have a crystal ball. You may call it a calendar or a day timer, and you may think you know what tomorrow's going to bring, but God may laugh with you and do something entirely different with your tomorrow, because God sees the bigger picture that none of us as humans can ever see. So if you want to sweat anything, only sweat the small stuff. Because when we try to take care of the big stuff, guess what? We're not doing our job. We've pushed God aside and we're doing God's job. And no matter how much you try to do that, God's not going to allow you to do that. God's going to push you back. One way or the other, you're going to find that you can't control anything. That's very sobering for us sometimes to realize that. So how are we to live if we can't control the world in which we live? He gives you something that sounds very odd. He says, eat, drink, and be merry. And I want to tell you, when I left seminary and was preparing to be ordained, I had to take ordination exams. There were 5 of them. One of them was on biblical knowledge. We had a 100-question test. I did pass it, but I failed the question about eat, drink, and be merry. There were 5 statements, and they all sounded extremely Shakespearean to me. And we had to pick the one of the 5 that was in Scripture. And one of the 5 options was eat, drink, and be merry. And I thought to myself, I never probably read Ecclesiastes, as you hadn't either until this summer. And I thought, there's no way in you know where that in the Bible they're going to put eat, drink, and be merry. I don't know what I picked, but whatever I picked was not the right answer. So this is not Shakespeare. This is Holy Scripture talking to you. Your job is to enjoy life. Some of you are smiling now. It's good to see you've got a little joy in you. Your job, according to Solomon and what we've been reading all summer, is to enjoy life. You're going to hear more of that in the next couple of weeks to follow as we wrap it up. We have privilege. We've been given permission to enjoy life because it's short enough. So stop worrying about the big things that you have no control over and just live with the way you're living. And allow God to worry about the big picture. Do you know how much easier it gets if you start to learn to live like that? It certainly frees me up. Lets me know I don't have to be worried about tomorrow and September and the future of this church and the future of my life. It frees me up to just live. So how do we do this? You just have to learn over and over again to trust. To trust in God with the bigger picture. To trust in God to be there with you every step of the way as God has promised and shown to us time and time again. Why do we read these Bible stories? For that very simple reason. To show God's faithfulness. To show how God has been there time and time again. To believe in the one who says, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Learn to live where you can just give it over to God and say, like Jesus said as he said it on the cross, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Jesus knew that the big picture wasn't his on the cross, it was God's. We need to learn to live like that. I think there's a lot of incredible wisdom to be found in this chapter from Ecclesiastes. It reminds me that I'm pretty small compared to God. There's a word that appears three times in the text when he talks about God, and it's a word that's always bothered me out of the Hebrew text. And I think it's our poor English translation, but it says to fear God. Because we use that word fear very differently than what the Hebrew writers and the wisdom literature where it appears and the Psalms and the Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, I think, are using it. Solomon uses it three times in today's text, to fear God. We think of fear as cowering, hiding when someone's trying to get us. And some people have that image of God, unfortunately, because that's what they've heard and been taught. But that I don't think that's what the text intends at all. I think it's to be in awe. To be in the presence of something so magnificent, you know, sometimes you say, I don't even have words for what I've experienced. Or you get those little chill bumps on your skin. I think that's the fear of the Lord that Solomon refers to. That God is so much bigger than my little human mind and heart can understand. It reminds me that God is much bigger than me. And as I have said to you before, that's the world I want to live in. Because if God's like me, if God's downsized to this, God is pretty puny. I don't want a God who looks like me and thinks like me and even acts like me. I want a God who is so much more. And that's the God that Solomon brings to us. I hope you can find that God to follow and obey. Amen.